Welcome back to another episode of Through the Wealth Lens. I'm Hannes Grascher, private wealth advisor at UBS International, and I'm joined by fellow financial advisor Max Grascher. Today we're talking about a topic that is becoming more important for athletes at every level, from established professional athletes to college athletes, building their brands through NIL. Here's a hypothetical scenario. A professional athlete hosted a private game-watching party with friends and teammates. During the event, one of the guests began filming on her phone. She was asked to stop and ultimately asked to leave. Later, she posted on Instagram with negative comments about the athlete. Now, on the surface, some people might look at that and say, that's just social media drama. But the reality is, situations like this can carry real consequences. They can affect reputation, opportunities, locker room trust, future earnings power, and in some cases may even raise legal issues. In today's environment, especially with NIL deals reshaping the economics of sports, an athlete's image is no longer just personal, it's financial. It's part of their business. And protecting that image is becoming just as important as protecting any other asset. So today, we've invited on an entertainment attorney to help us break this down, how athletes can prevent situations like this, what legal and practical options exist when they happen, and why protecting image and endorsement value matters now more than ever. Joining us today is Brandon Leopoldis, entertainment attorney with Leopoldis Law APC. Brandon has a ton of experience advising talent, public figures, and athletes on brand protection, contracts, reputation issues, and media-related risk. Brandon, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, let's start with that scenario. An athlete hosts a private event, someone begins filming without permission, gets asked to leave, and then goes online and posts negative comments. From your perspective, what jumps out to you right away?
Well, what jumps out is whenever you're a public figure, people are going to want to be around you. Maybe they're going to increase their social media reach or their perceived value because they're around somebody that other people identify with or that they believe to know who they are. And so it can get really risky because you don't know what their motives are. So even when you do everything correct, sometimes you're going to have people in, for example, a party or at an event that you may just not know. And then a picture gets snapped and you have to understand how you're going to say to the media that you don't actually know that person when you have a picture with them. And so some of those little things can become much bigger deals later on in life, even if it might not be that week, it might be 5 or 10 years later. And so it's always important to be aware of who's around you and also what that environment is that you're in.
And Brandon, when something like that happens, is your first thought that this is mainly a privacy issue, a reputational issue, or something that could become a real legal matter?
Right. Sometimes it's all three of those, because the privacy issue, especially when you have your home, anytime you're taking pictures in your home, you have a birthday party, a championship celebration, people can see the layout of your home. And so that is always concerning for me when you bring people into the home, not just from a legal perspective of somebody tripping down the stairs, something to that effect, somebody stealing something. All of those things are realistic possibilities. But also when you're away and you're playing on a game on television, it's been reported in the news that you're filming a movie on the other side of the earth, that all of a sudden people know that your home may not be as secure as it would be if you were in your hometown. So they might be able to understand the layout. They might see things that are on the shelf that you just didn't think of when you were taking the picture. As it relates to reputational harm, that could be because who else is in the picture, who's invited, who's a guest of somebody that comes in. And then lastly, as a legal issue, it can certainly turn into that because social media drama may develop other issues that pop up. If you respond to those things, you might have a defamation type of a suit. You have a lot of different things when you're a public figure that, frankly, the rest of us don't have to put up with.
Because I think a lot of people assume that once something hits social media, it's just out there and there's really not much you can do. But that's not always true, is it?
No, you can actually get takedown orders. And when these athletes or entertainers or public figures are having an event, I typically recommend that they have some sort of almost like a waiver that's involved that tells people what they can and can't do, whether it's taking pictures or video, if you don't want those things to be done at an event or at your home or wherever you are, and you're the host, you can require certain things of them. Just like when you buy tickets to an event online, you always click that box, probably don't read it. And you can require things of people. And that's typically what we recommend. So if you do a ticketed event or something to that effect, you can have basically a contract between you and your attendees on what is and isn't allowed. So if somebody's going to violate those rules, perhaps taking pictures that are not controlled by you, you can ask them to leave. It can get a little irritating for that public figure if they're the one trying to ask the person to leave. You don't want to be always the bad guy. So you might have your security do that as well. I'm a big proponent of just having some security there that's not you. In case those things happen, you don't end up looking like the bad guy. The security company might.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And Brandon, let's talk about the setting itself. If an athlete is hosting people in a private home or private venue, what rights does that host have when it comes to filming and recording?
Really good question. You really have the right to say whether or not you want those things to happen when you invite people into your home or a private setting, because you're the one controlling that environment. It's different if you go to a concert and you're one of 70,000 people. People are going to take pictures and video of you. It's hard to get everybody to stop, right? But if you're inviting them into a private venue, a private party, you can set those terms. Now, it doesn't mean that you own the rights to the pictures, but it's going to mean that you can shut that down pretty easily and pretty quickly if they're violating whatever terms there are. We've worked with entertainers and athletes that are sober, and so if somebody's going to bring drinks with them, you're not getting in. That's just not something that those people want around them, so they can control that environment just a little bit more. Of course, the more people, the harder it is, but especially if they're in your home or in a private residence, you can really control those things a lot better.
And how important is it that the gathering is private versus public?
Right, that's a big one. You know, whenever we have our public figure clients going to something, we have to be cognizant of what's going around, right? Some people are just trying to get that internet clout, and it's not always good. So they may be yelling something to you to try and get a reaction. They may try and physically push you to try and get a reaction to trigger you. And so when you're in public, it's important that you understand what the risks are there. However, if it's private, whether that's a home or a luxury suite at a game or a concert, or just a private venue where you're celebrating something with people, that's going to be a little bit different because, again, you dictate those terms. And I like that working with public figures is simply if you can dictate the terms and control the environment, the less things can go haywire. And if they do go haywire, it's a limited nature and can be taken care of, hopefully, pretty quickly.
Yeah, that's such an important distinction because athletes live in a world where people often feel entitled to access to their lives, their homes, their conversations, their relationships. But being recognizable doesn't mean giving up every boundary. Is that something you'd agree with?
Absolutely. You know, you just have to take different precautions, right? Nobody cares if I walk into Target. But they certainly care if a Shaquille O'Neal or a Tom Brady, Serena Williams is walking through their local Target. That becomes a whole thing for everybody that's there. And so when you have that dichotomy of just trying to be a regular person and do just day-to-day things, it can become an event for everybody else that sees you. So when you can control that environment, I highly recommend it. It does mean that you have to take some added precautions, and it's not always what you want to do. Sometimes you just want to have that freedom to go out to dinner. Well, those private rooms at high-end restaurants are for a good reason, not just for renting them out, but sometimes it's so you can experience that dinner without having to worry about some of these other things. And if you have the means to be able to do that, that's certainly a perk because you're always at risk when you're a public figure. And so we want to control that environment to limit that risk, but still provide you the opportunity to live your life.
Yeah, Brandon, that leads me to my next question. So let's shift to prevention, because ideally you want to stop this before it starts. What are some of the smartest steps athletes can take before hosting a private event?
Right. Number one is check your insurance, right? Lawyers and insurance seems to be go hand in hand. But if you're bringing people into your venue, right, your home especially, you want to make sure that if somebody does fall down those stairs, somebody does slip, fall, and, you know, gets injured somehow, that you're covered. You don't want to come out of pocket for that. The other thing is that you want to prime those guests for what they should expect, what they can and can't do. And the more you set those boundaries on a regular basis, the more those regular attendees are going to let those other people know. I highly recommend that if you're going to invite people to something, that you have some sort of record that you did that, whether that's through a platform like Eventbrite or Partiful or those other ticketing platforms. Even when it's a birthday party, you can do those kind of things where you know who's coming, they can RSVP and all of that, but you tell them no pictures allowed, or we will have a photographer on site, no other pictures will be permitted, those kind of things. You want to make sure that you put, lock the doors that you don't want people to go into, and you control the environment. That might mean that you move some things around, that you move things out. And it's not just about the attendees. It's also regarding those people that are coming in to help you with the event, the caterers, right? All of the setup stuff. So if you're renting furniture, all of those people need to understand what's going on too and be held to the same standard as those attendees at whatever event it is.
So Brandon, at what point should an athlete consider something more formal, like a written media waiver or an NDA?
Right. Really good question. Anytime you're having domestic staff, especially when you're talking about your home. So that's a nanny, a chef, just a maid, a housekeeper, those kind of things. Private security, you always want them on an NDA. It's not about hiding bad stuff. It's about protecting the information about you. Again, nobody cares about what's going on in my home generally, but they're going to care about what's going on with their favorite wide receiver that they're on a fantasy team, right? We want to make sure that these athletes don't have information about them floating out there. You can't always stop somebody who signed an NDA from giving out information, but it will generally slow them down mentally, and they're going to think about, do we really want to give out this information? And so that's the first step. But otherwise, it's just being cognizant. Early in the process is always better. If you're just going, if you're a recent draftee and you're going to go to dinner with a few friends, you're probably going to be okay. But once you're in that season and once you start going and more people know who you are, now it's time to take some precautions. And so it's understandable that you don't always want to jump through all these hoops just to go to a dinner or have a party. But it is important to understand where you sit in the world and what your potential is, right? If you're a 10-day call-up in the NBA, you may not have that same cachet that, say, a Michael Jordan, a LeBron James have. However, you might turn out to be one of those guys one day. And so you really want to just keep apprised of who you have around you and where you're going and what you're doing. A riskier lifestyle leads to more risk. But being in the public eye, of course, is always going to come with that enhanced risk because people want that access that we talked about earlier.
Yeah, Brandon, so a lot of athletes probably hear NDA and think that sounds extreme for a casual social gathering. Is it really extreme anymore, or is it becoming more normal because the financial stakes are so much higher?
Yeah, it's becoming more and more normal. And it doesn't mean, of course, you're going to have people that leave and say, you're never going to believe who was at Brandon's party, right? That's going to come out. But some of those things about just the pictures and those kind of things are really important. And the NDAs are becoming more and more common. We do that work a lot to help these athletes and the celebrities, sometimes even politicians, make sure that when they're having a private event, that it remains as private as possible. You don't want your crazy aunt posting those pictures on Facebook and her friends are saying some things. We want to control that environment. And that's where I recommend just controlling it from the start. The earlier you start that process, the more people understand that you're going to control the process. And typically, that's just going to lead to better results down the line.
And that's really the key point, right? What may feel socially awkward on the front end can be far less painful than dealing with reputational damage on the back end.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's going to be key. Make sure that you're handling everything now so the reputational damage doesn't occur, right? The more you're able to do those things, the more you're able to set up the right systems, just the less chance you have of that risk going really weird.
Yeah, so Brandon, now I want to shift gears to NIL, because this is where the conversation gets even more important. For years, people thought of endorsement value mostly in terms of established professional athlete. But now, even younger athletes, college athletes, and in some cases, athletes with strong social followings before they ever go pro, have real commercial value attached to their name, image, and likeness. How has NIL changed the legal and financial importance of brand protection?
It has totally changed it, because you used to be dealing with people in their early 20s that are starting to become pro athletes, and they've had they're able to see this limited scope of being a celebrity or being publicly identifiable as somebody that's out there doing the branding stuff. But now we have high school athletes, and thanks to social media, thanks to the internet, thanks to all of those things, we have 14, 15, 16-year-old kids that have millions of followers, and they just happen to be an athlete. And so now that celebrity status starts having the same issues at those younger ages as they progress through college and onto the pro level. And so now we're starting to have to work with teenagers and have the same conversation with a high school freshman that we used to have with a rookie going into the National Football League. And I think now one of the big things is these kids, until you reach that age of maturity, and it's generally 18 in the United States, they can't even sign contracts and have an enforceable contract. So there's a lot of extra hoops that you have to jump through, have mom and dad be guarantors on contracts and all those kind of things. And then setting up Coogan accounts, doing all of these things that just to do the same business activity, simply because they're starting earlier and earlier. And when they go to college now, we're seeing athletes that had shoe deals for other reasons trying to go to a university that already has a very lucrative shoe deal across the board. And so when they're doing that, it's important for the schools to align with those athletes that might already be in their ecosystem, or they're going to go try and poach somebody else's athlete. So if you have an Adidas deal, you're going to a Nike school. That might be a good business decision. It might be a bad business decision. But all of that ties around NIL now.
So really, you know, I think it's fair to say that an athlete's image isn't just a PR issue. It's an asset.
Absolutely. Yeah, this is, while colleges are still kind of in that pay-to-play model and we're calling it NIL, it's still a really big asset, because if you're going to play in front of 100,000 people every week playing football, or 20,000 people, say 40 times a year playing college basketball, you're going to have this asset that you can capitalize on. And sometimes it's about your affiliation because you're playing college sports, but not always, right? Some people have kind of gone above and beyond that, whether it's the Cavender twins or Livy Dunn, all of the football players you see. You can imagine Johnny Manziel would have been one of those guys that would have just made all of the money while he was at Texas A&M, and he didn't really have to worry about the NFL if those NIL payments were around when he was in college. Your name is really your best asset anyway, and that goes for everyone, because that carries your reputation as well. With these athletes, they have a brand value because people want to know what they're doing. They want to know about them. They're following them on social media. So again, you go to the wrong party, that could be a problem. But if you align yourself with a brand, think FTX was a good example. All of those athletes involved, they ended up getting sued because they just didn't really have the right setup around these commercials that were going out. Really important that you don't become one of those athletes that you kind of look at and think they're always getting involved in something messy. Those aren't the athletes that get the desk jobs as a commentator. Those are the athletes that just become retired athletes.
And, you know, like, with game statistics or a contract, you know, those are finite. But that asset, that lives well beyond the playing career. That's, you know, far after you're done on the court or the field.
Right, and you can actually set up the rest of your reputation, the rest of your life, based upon what happens on the field or off the field, right? If you're going to get in locker room fights and those get reported, people might think of you as a hothead even when you're 55 years old and haven't played the sport in 30 years, right? And so it's really important to understand every day when you're showing up to work, whether it's on set, whether it's at the practice facility, whether it's at the games, how you interact with everybody is going to matter. And that reputation and that name, image, and likeness is going to be important, because you may just get pigeonholed by the public because it's something that they regularly saw online. It might be that it's a good thing, might be a bad thing. But it's important to understand reputation really is what we're talking about with especially the post-career NIL.
Brandon, can one incident, one video, one post, one online narrative actually affect endorsement conversations or brand partnerships?
Yes. Let me give you an example. We had an athlete that signed with a energy drink company for the money, right? It was a good deal, a lot of money, but they wanted to do, you know, a Instagram Live. And they're walking around their house like I told them not to. But they open up the refrigerator and they have a different energy drink in the refrigerator. And wouldn't you know it, we had just signed this deal. I'm the one that gets the phone call because everybody sees this post. Now, his followers may not have recognized it, but the brand partner certainly did. And they wanted to pull out of the deal. And that can affect your reputation because, right, it's not really authentic, number one. And number two, you just signed the deal. If you didn't want to get involved with a company, don't get involved with them. If you don't like their product, don't, you know, you got to be cognizant of how you're going to approach things. And so for us, yeah, one post can cause some financial damage there, but also one post that is so out of line with your character and what your what everybody's perception of you is, can also cause problems. If I'm the wholesome guy next door and then I show up at a strip club and I'm posting live from there, or I have a friend that's posting about how they had a great night out at Magic City, that's going to be a problem, right? That's going to diminish what people think of you, or it's going to shift what is a good narrative into something that you don't want associated with you.
Yeah, and even if a deal doesn't disappear immediately, you know, it can still weaken an athlete's negotiating leverage with sponsors.
Certainly, because what will happen in a negotiation is you'll negotiate the money, the athlete side always wants more, and they're going to say, look, there's a reputational risk. Look at this last post. We don't want to be associated with that. We don't think he's going to do it again, but if he does, we're at risk, so we can't invest more because of that risk. And they're always going to look for stuff like that in a negotiation, and everybody has to factor that in. If you know your client, you're able to work around some of those things, but not always. And in fact, you're oftentimes not going to realize how much you're missing out on because of those things. Those deals just aren't going to come because of something that happened in your past.
Yeah, I think that's an important nuance. And sometimes the cost doesn't show up as a dramatic cancellation like we saw in The Bachelor, right, or Bachelorette. Sometimes it shows up more quietly, fewer offers, lower offers, less enthusiasm, more hesitation from brands that don't want controversy.
Certainly, and that goes with associating yourself with certain people. Sometimes you just don't know, right? Sometimes it's just somebody's a friend of a friend and you see them around and you're in that circle. Well, you might have 15 pictures with them. Imagine what happens when all of a sudden, 10 years later, they're convicted of a crime and we're starting to see this now. You may have done nothing nefarious, but you're still going to be associated. That's why it's important to control your environment and your narrative. But we can also see that where just those life decisions, a simple DUI, right? How you talk and deal with your spouse in heated situations, what you do when you're on the road, when you're away from home, even if you know, you're a young athlete, you're going to have a lot of temptation around you. What temptation do you lean into? Which do you refrain from? Could make a big difference later in life when that money really is going to matter as you're preparing for life after your sport.
Yeah, and once that perception starts to build, it can be hard to unwind.
Yeah, it really is. Because once the public thinks of you one way, they're not going to think of you as the polar opposite, right? It's really hard for athletes to become actors and then have people take them seriously as a actor because they remember you when you played pro basketball. And so it's really difficult for a lot of people to make that transition from one thing to another, whether that's a career-wise or it's that reputation, because we all see, you know, athletes in a certain light, and especially now that we get more access to them on social media, in the regular media, we get to see them a lot. We get to hear how they are. We get to interact with them on podcasts and those kind of things. And so if they're preaching a Sunday podcast, but yet they're going out and, you know, drinking, carousing, and doing all the other stuff, it's really hard to mesh those two to get a deal with some home goods company, right? They don't like that drastic change. Instead, they want to see you do one or the other. And if you're going to be authentic about it, it's really important to make sure that if you're going to progress, that you're going to tell people about it, right? You're going to be more open, where if you start out as the villain on the hockey team, that you're able to show off the ice who you actually are, the good, the bad, the ugly sometimes, will help people understand who you are as a person and hopefully transition later on after your career is over into new things.
So, Brandon, let's say despite all precautions, someone starts filming at a private event. In the moment, what should the athlete or the athlete's team do?
Yeah, this is where the rubber meets the road. This is the important, the most important part, is generally what we recommend is the three strikes rule. Hey, can you put the camera away? We really don't want outside filming or video. And typically people are going to be nice. They're going to say, okay. But they come back to it maybe an hour later. People are just conditioned now to record everything. And so they pull out that phone again. At that time, it's generally advisable to start getting somebody else involved, right? Is have that security officer come over and say, look, can't have you doing that. And then third, that's the time that they got to go. And trained security is going to make sure that that doesn't lead to a bigger thing. But it's important that you give people that opportunity. You can rule that with an iron fist, but a lot of people just aren't going to show up because it feels so hostile. And so it's that delicate balance. But oftentimes when we see a picture that we didn't know get posted, right? Somebody might have gotten a picture and you just didn't know it. If it goes up online and that athlete doesn't want that image, whatever it is, now that we have that contract term that says, I promise I'm not going to take any pictures and I will not post it. And if I do post it, you can request that it's taken down. You send that to Instagram or Meta or whoever is the social media company. And we've had some good success getting those things taken down. Even if we have to send the demand letter to that person, we want to write it in a way that is straightforward, doesn't make the athlete look like a jerk. But it does help us with our clients to get those things taken down as quickly as possible. Because again, sometimes it's those people with the least amount of followers that might be able to gain a lot of traction if you treat them the wrong way.
Well, Brandon, this has been a really valuable conversation, especially with drafts coming up and draft parties, et cetera, right? I think the big takeaway is in today's environment, an athlete's image is not separate from their financial life. It's part of it. Social media, NIL, endorsements, licensing, and post-career opportunities have all raised the stakes. What may look like a small private incident can quickly become a public reputational event. And if athletes are not proactive, the cost can go far beyond embarrassment. It can truly affect marketability, sponsorship value, and long-term wealth creation. The good news is that a lot of these risks can be reduced with the right planning, the right boundaries, and the right team around the athlete. Brandon, thank you again for joining us and helping break this down.
Thank you. Appreciate you having me.
And thank you to everyone listening. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to subscribe, share it with someone in the sports world, and join us next time as we continue discussing the financial, legal, and strategic issues shaping athletes' life and careers on Through the Wealth Lens. Until next time, take care.
This podcast is presented for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. It does not constitute an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy any specific product or service. UBS does not provide legal or tax advice, and we would recommend listeners to obtain appropriate independent professional advice. Some of the views and opinions expressed may not be those of UBS Group AG or its affiliates. UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. These services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG and is a member of FINRA and SIPC.